And the cliches are endless, right? About, you know, you never grow in your comfort zone, and yeah. strong winds make strong timber, and, yeah. and. Yeah. But the fact is, we don't grow when we're comfortable.
Okay, welcome back to the Essential Craftsman podcast. I'm Nate. I've got my dad here, the Essential Craftsman, and we're talking about obstacles and overcoming obstacles. What are some of the biggest obstacles that you faced in your career?
Probably the first one was the cyclic nature of economies, and that in construction, your income depends on the general economic health of where you're living. Growing up in Oregon and then moving to Wyoming, I was in two economies that were commodity-based. In Oregon, traditionally, it was timber. And then when timber crashed, 1981, 82, moved to Wyoming to an economy that was based on agriculture, sugar beets, beans, barley, and uranium, which was still a demand thing, and oil. And so when I got there, that economy was on the upstroke. And then after a while, you know, as it commodities wax and wane. So that was the first biggest obstacle in my career, I think, so but not the only one.
What did that look like? Basically, your coworkers would start getting laid off and the boss would say, don't come in on Friday.
The construction company I was working for, whether it was one guy like R. Wade Welch, I was working for him in Wyoming. I worked for Gary Wagner here in Oregon. And when they ran out of work, everybody ran out of work. And if the owner was not working, he closed his doors, or you were laid off for a while. And if it was at the beginning of a recession or depression, the work came in so slowly, sometimes you were just done. And then you were out pounding the pavement with all of the other construction workers who had just run into that. And competition for the work was intense, and it still is in those times. One of the mindsets that I had, particularly when I was younger, and I remember in Las Vegas, where work was everywhere. It was almost always everywhere. I had this kind of an advantage that I got to where I loved looking for the next job. I loved identifying what type of work and what type of company, and then finding who was in charge and walking up to them and look them right in the eye and say, look, I'm looking for work and I can solve some of your problems. And I don't know if it was ego or what, but I loved looking for and finding the next job. So that was a plus. The thing that ended up being maybe the biggest obstacle to me inside my own head, between my own ears, was I'm kind of a worrier. I kind of project. Part of solving problems for me is trying to anticipate what's coming. And I get carried away with that. And I kind of anticipate every possible problem before it gets there. And I feel a compulsion to lay the groundwork for defeating that problem before it gets there. But that sometimes kind of crippled me in the past, I think, anticipating changes or problems or reversals before they became real. And where that really crippled me was I could never really work up the courage to, when I became a general contractor, to build a payroll, because I wasn't confident, particularly back here in Oregon, in my ability to spin up enough work to support 2 or 3 or 4 or 10 other workers. And the anxiety that I felt around making a living for us, I just couldn't visualize expanding that anxiety to providing work opportunities for other families. So those two, a confidence thing and a lack of confidence thing, both I think were big players in my career choices.
I love analogies, and it's so easy to think in career terms about an analogy of a career and a workplace as like a boxing match where you're delivering blows and taking blows. And what's the trick to sort of absorbing some of those blows? Or even when you were younger, when industries are changing, I'm sure, for example, you built your sawmill and you knew you're going to be a sawmiller and make a lot of money doing that. And it would have been so fun. And all of a sudden there was a moment where you realized, oh, I'm actually not going to be a sawmiller anymore. And what's it like recovering from that blow?
So having to leave Oregon because of the recession in 80, 81, 82 didn't feel like a failure or a broken dream. That just felt like, wow, okay, I have to do something different. And so stepping away from the sawmill at that moment just felt like I was putting on hold something that I thought was going to be viable because of circumstances beyond my control. later, after I moved the sawmill to Wyoming and thought it would make a nice sideline that I fully expected to grow, that moment when I realized, just like you said, whoa, this is not viable. This is too far into the hobby side of the equation and not far enough into the livelihood side of the equation. It can't justify all the time it's taking. That reversal was the first real blow to my confidence that I could figure out anything and do anything that I wanted. And since then, life has delivered enough of those that I got a lot smarter about that and realized, whoa, I can't figure out everything and I can't do everything I want. I responded to that by saying, fine, I'm going to concentrate on construction. I'm going to move to Las Vegas and increase my construction basis.
One of the big obstacles that I did not overcome when I was right out of school, I worked hard to try to pass the CPA exam and be a CPA. And I took that test. I can't remember if it was 3 or 4 times, or maybe 5 times.
I think it was 3 or 4.
I think I failed it on the 4th time. And I remember carrying all of my, that very day, carrying all of my study materials out to the big city trash can and throwing them away.
Wow.
And being like, okay, well,
that's not happening.
I'm not doing that. And, hallelujah. I mean, maybe I could have like kept swinging and knocked that obstacle out, but the act of submitting or failing and turning away from it was a good thing for me. And I'm so glad that I did not overcome that obstacle.
Pivoting is really important, the ability to pivot and weighing the opportunity or when the moment is to pivot and when the time is to stay there and keep slugging is a huge thing. So I was reading a little bit of the Marcus Aurelius book that Till and Edward sent me, what, a year and a half ago or something?
Yeah.
And the whole Stoic philosophy has a lot to say about dealing with adversity and not fearing the future, because anything that happened, to accept with equanimity whatever happens and just understand that whether it's good or bad or whether it's win, lose, or draw, it is going to do a good thing within yourself if you let it. And that's closely related to a Christian philosophy, which is mine, but there's a lot of wisdom in it. And I can't quote it, but I think he said something about you don't have to worry about the future because you'll face that, paraphrasing, with essentially the same skill set and the same set of tools and the same amount of confidence you've had to overcome obstacles in your past. So you don't even need to think about them because you're going to, when that moment comes, you will be as well equipped to deal with that as you were at everything in the past. And so just heads up, shoulders back, keep walking. That's a pretty positive philosophy.
Yeah, it really is. And just facing obstacles is so good and important, whether you overcome them or not, because the more you get used to facing obstacles, the easier it becomes to face additional obstacles. And you compare that with a person who maybe hasn't dealt with a lot in their life, it can be traumatizing and devastating to maybe approach an obstacle for the first time, you know, once you're an adult, and it can be kind of like a pretty serious reality check. Whereas I felt like I've maybe not overcome major serious obstacles, but I've certainly failed at enough of them and dealt with enough of them that if a big obstacle plopped in my lap tomorrow, I wouldn't be too terrified because I felt like I've seen obstacles before.
Yeah. I have long identified with sort of a prepper mentality, but I'm not as drawn to that as I used to be because I realized that any individual, no matter how tough or resourceful or well-prepared they are, is vulnerable to one well-placed 30-06 round. But a group of people, people you have a relationship with, is the biggest asset in any kind of a difficult situation there is. And I think that that is, I think that is the most useful resource preparing for obstacles, is to live in such a way that you have people that you can trust and that trust you.
Yeah. On that note, there are obstacles that are people. In other words, a family member or a relationship that's permanent that is an obstacle.
You know, and it may have motivated your question, the third major obstacle in my career was a family member. And he was an obstacle. And I didn't deal with the obstacle very successfully, but his personality and the things that drove him derailed me during some of my most productive years. He was the reason I moved to Las Vegas, and he was the reason I moved back to Oregon. And so that question about how you deal with close family members that are obstacles is a huge, hugely important question. And the first part of any answer that I would pretend to have to that is you have to be objective in identifying whether or not a family member is in fact an obstacle, or whether they're not, they just annoy you, and whether that friction is your fault or theirs or shared.
Yeah.
And boy, that takes a lot of self-awareness to come to any sort of an objective answer to that. And usually your wife is going to be your best sounding board on that, but not always.
Yeah.
So I don't know. There comes a time when you just have to raise a drawbridge, right? You have to raise the drawbridge for the good of your own mentality and the people who are closest to you.
You almost hate it when people say this to you, but it's true. And that is, you can choose how you react to something. Oh. And that's just so true. And no matter how ugly the obstacle is and how deliberate it may have been thrust upon you, it is still your choice.
It is.
How to react to it. And
it is.
Like I said, I hate when people remind me that at yeah. the wrong moment, but it's just yeah. a fact. And it could be with family members or people that we still do get to choose how we react and proceed.
And in the rearview mirror, I realized that my role in that whole thing, and in a lot of cases, I reacted badly, but badly from a passive-aggressive perspective rather than from a proactive perspective. And so it was just, yeah, I didn't do it very well, but thankfully, that is permanently no longer a problem. If you can get a long view, the longer view you can get on whatever your problem is right then, even if it's just a week, better if it's a month, better if it's a year, best if it's a 20-30 year perspective. How much difference is this going to make when I'm dead? Whatever happens after I'm dead, that's really probably the best perspective. What is there about this that is going to be important to me the day before I die is, I think, a pretty helpful thing to consider as objectively as you can, or better, with someone you trust who could maybe have some wisdom to bring on that particular question.
I remember you telling me at some point, I can't remember the situation, but identifying what is the very worst thing that could happen, really, really get extreme. What is it? Kind of getting comfortable with it and thinking about how bad would that actually be? And I do find that helpful because, number one, a lot of times it's not that bad, or at That's least right. it's something you could live with. And number two, it can help remind how unlikely it is that yeah. that case scenario will be the one that manifests.
Like almost never.
Yeah.
Like statistically, the very worst possible thing that could happen almost never happens. And the proof for that is you can always say, well, it could be worse. Mm-hmm. But children really do provide the motivation for overcoming obstacles. You can't quit. You can't lay down and quit mm-hmm. when you have this little handful of people that just aren't interested in how hard it is for dad. Yeah. And there's real reinforcement in that.
Do you have any other tips or feedback? If some, you know, you've certainly faced obstacles in the form of certain inspectors mm. and clients that were, you know, hellish,
yeah.
and anything in particular that has helped you when you absolutely had to bust through an obstacle, mm-hmm. not turn away from it, not live with it, but break on through.
As a small businessman and a general contractor in the Western United States, regulations are an obstacle. Mm-hmm. So that's one. And you have to decide if you are going to expend some big portion of your discretionary energy fighting that, or just nod your head, swallow hard, and say, okay, I'm going to play. These are the rules. I have to play by them. I'm going to play.
Yeah.
That was how I was able to finally sort of deal with that more successfully. And I recommend that people who live in an overtly regulatory environment come to that conclusion early, or it'll bleed you. It'll just bleed you.
Yeah. That's really it. These are the rules of the game.
Yeah.
Hopefully everybody's playing, buying them. And even if not, you're going to.
Yeah. Yeah. And that includes paying the taxes. If you have to pay the taxes to play the game, then you pay the taxes.
Yeah.
And you just find a way to raise your price to support that. So that would be one. The obstacle of a hellish client. There comes a point when you have to realize, look, I don't have enough time in my life or energy inside of me to argue and fight. I have to just tip my head down and get the work done every day. Get there on time, return all of the phone calls, dot all of the I's, cross all of the T's, never make one mistake, and get away from that. So Mm-hmm. So to be more specific, I think the way that I dealt with those, that small handful of clients, was I stopped taking any other work. I stopped bidding work. I stopped diverting any attention away from surviving this encounter with this person, mm-hmm. and just pushed through it to whatever satisfaction. And one time, the satisfaction came from giving $15,000 back for the deck for another client. I could see that it was going to be a bottomless pit of contention and negotiation and probably lawsuit, and there would never be satisfaction on both sides. Mm-hmm. And so the best money I could spend at that moment, in my judgment, was to give back the money and go find 8 or 10 jobs to compensate for that. Mm-hmm. And so that's a way to push through an obstacle.
Yeah. I've felt that a couple different times, and I really love the word ballistic for lots of reasons, but there is kind of a mindset you can get in when you have to deal with something like this. It doesn't mean for like an afternoon or a contentious conversation, but even actually like this next 3 weeks where you can just get your head right and go, I'm going to go ballistic on this mm-hmm. problem,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
solve it the hard way by yes. doing the work, waking up at 4 a.m., going to bed at 2 yep. a.m. I'm not going to see my family. I'm going to help them like understand the whole family's got to just go ballistic on this thing.
Yeah.
And sometimes if you can, you don't want to live that way, but sometimes you just got to roll up your sleeves
yeah.
and just go to town. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of nice to know you can hit that gear sometimes. And it's definitely one way to do it.
It is. And sometimes you have to.
Yeah.
I know good people who do not have that in them, that they've got a mindset where they think that that's an unreasonable cost to pay. I should not have to work 80 hours a week ever. And so I'm not going to. And if they never have that gear, then it doesn't take as much of a storm to capsize the boat when you can't work 80 hours a week and keep at it.
Yeah.
You know, I worked for Frank Martin. He owned Martin Harris Construction in Las Vegas. A great outfit. I have nothing but respect for Frank Martin. I quit him in his face one morning in his office at about 4:30 a.m. I just walked in and told him I was done. But that's separate from the fact that I've got respect for him. And one of the quotations of his that I love is that the competition drops off after the first 40 hours of the week.
Mm-hmm.
And the more time you can spend in that ballistic mode
yeah.
without becoming addicted to it,
mm-hmm.
the easier success becomes.
Yeah, it does. And sometimes it's just nice knowing you have a gear, you can solve problems one way or another. You're going to get through this, whether it's breaking through it when I quit what at the time was, you know, a goal I had worked on for a few years of getting that CPA license. I mean, that was kind of the whole point of going to college, to mm-hmm. be honest. And in mm-hmm. some ways it felt like I was kind of throwing that all away. And in actuality I was. That degree is not really helpful to me at the moment. But point is, it's nice to know that it's an option, or at least hopefully it's an option.
Mm-hmm.
Consider it as an option.
So you and I don't see your life experience in the same way on that. And I'm thinking of what Marcus Aurelius would say about that. That educational process that you went through, including that bitter defeat of not passing that CPA, in fact contributed to who you are in a big way. In ways that maybe are easier for us that were on the outside watching you grow than it is for you to identify. But all of those experiences, win, lose, or draw, you know, the positive ones and probably more profoundly the negative ones that knock us out of our comfort zone are the ones that cause change.
Mm-hmm.
And the cliches are endless, right, about, you know, you never grow in your comfort zone and
yeah.
strong winds make strong timber and
yeah.
and. But the fact is we don't grow when we're comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
If everything is exactly the way we want it to be, there is no catalyst for change, at least for me. If everything is exactly predictable and comfortable and restful and there's no pain and there's nothing to be worried about, nothing to wake up at 3 a.m. and have your heart rate elevate and figure out, you will stay in that condition from there on. But if you have to go ballistic once in a while, you emerge differently.
Yeah. Well, a few things that help. Number one, it helps to be honest with yourself about the obstacles you're facing. In other words, don't ignore or put off or pretend they don't exist. Acknowledge and face up to the obstacle, even if it means turning away from it, would be number one.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, keeping your chin up and maintaining a positive outlook is hard to do, but there's definitely something, it's mental, it's psychological. There's just, if you can get in the habit of being positive and not letting your general entire being be negative and consumed by it. There's true. Something to that also.
It is.
Aside
is.
From that, get a lot of sleep as much as you can anyways. Try to eat right. Can. And just hope it ends quickly.
And surround yourself with people who have something positive to bring to the conversation. Talk to people who have had... So there's no way for me to overemphasize the importance of this. Identify somebody who has either had a similar experience or who has wisdom enough to take their life experience and apply it to your problem, who you trust, who's not going to blow smoke up your dress, who's not going to pour cold water on you just to watch you drown, mm-hmm. but can give you an objective third-party perspective that is priceless if you have wisdom enough to listen to them.
We, in the Spec House Project, have been dealing with and chipping our way through and hammering on an obstacle of, at least for me, one of the biggest in my life, and there's good and bad, and the bad is also good, but it's just been challenging, and we have a really long ways to go. This might be the type of obstacle that someone would be looking at who might be just getting into college and is planning on going clear through medical school.
Yeah.
You might be worried about your finals, but you have 10 more years of finals, so we're trying to break it down and only worry about the items that are right in front of us and the ones that we can control directly. Mm-hmm. If they're outside of that, it's kind of helpful to not that you don't have to think about them or stress about them, but don't give them, front and center.
Yeah, don't borrow the trouble if you don't have to.
Don't borrow the trouble.
Before we sign off on this, probably the most helpful thing that I can tell people to help overcome obstacles in your life is to tune in to Jordan Peterson. And that guy right now has got his own obstacles that he's dealing with, and I pray for him, right? Mm-hmm. I love Jordan Peterson, but more than I love Jordan Peterson, I love the wisdom that he has brought to the conversation for a lot of people, specifically around obstacles and dealing with obstacles and how to shake off whatever it is that's holding you where you are and keeping you from where you ought to be. So I cannot recommend him highly enough.
Yeah, he does a good job at just acknowledging an obstacle as being so hard. I've heard a few discussions where someone will ask him a question or situation and he kind of just like, that is so hard. And sometimes just hearing somebody acknowledge and give you the admit like, yeah, that is really hard, as opposed to like, ah, it's no big deal, I did that.
Yeah,
I went to school.
Laced up your boots.
I built a house. Yeah. I did that. Thanks for listening to the Essential Craftsman podcast. If you have specific questions, you can put them on YouTube under the comments. We put these on our second channel, EC2, and we will catch you next time.